being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Oh, welcome to our show once again today. I'm delighted that you're joining us. We have another excellent topic, one that I'm sure will not only have questions about, but you'll also want to follow up with as well. You already know that racism is not our fault. We're born into these stories, but you know, that doesn't mean that we can't do something about it and actively work towards racial harmony. Well, you know, we have this tension every day. And part of this show will show a little bit about what that tension is and how we can really do something more about it. Our topic today is world-class tennis, a black coach's point of view. Yes, a black coach's point of view. Sports has often been referenced as a great racial and even national unifier. The road to the top includes the right coaches at the right time in a career. I think we all know that. You may never have heard of or know the names of some of these coaches who are African American. Well, who are they? What story do they have to tell us about the real world of coaching? How does race factor into this journey for coaches? Or does winning or the color of green money trump any racial matters? The journey to becoming a world-class tennis star requires brilliance from excellent coaches. It takes so many ingredients and sometimes a stroke of luck, no pun intended, to make it to the top. Well, Morris King Jr. is going to be joining us today. Morris King Jr. is a world-class tennis coach who's coached Venus and Serena Williams and others earlier in their careers. He is African American. I'm wondering what part of this story about sports can he tell us in this genteel world of tennis, anyone? You might have heard that phrase several times. Well, he has a point of view, and his point of view may surprise you. Not only may it surprise you, but it may open new questions about this pipeline or the barriers to success behind the stars that we all know and admire and we love to watch them. Welcome to our show, Morris.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. You're really, really honoring me a great deal because I don't get this kind of treatment. So I have to be very, very, very thankful for this.
Well, we know that based on your bio that you've not only been a coach and assistant to the father of Serena and Venus, who Serena won this past weekend, right? The French Open.
Yes, she did.
Yeah, yeah. But also you've coached some Bosnian players as well and others, too, that we could talk about. But, you know, the purpose of this show today isn't really to talk about the players so much. It's really to talk about this whole idea of who is helping to support these world-class athletes get to that golden circle that has to do with tennis. And, you know, Morris, I have a question for you, and I think our listening audience wants to know, too. Just a little bit about you. Why are you so interested in tennis? Why do you like this so much?
Tennis has been a lifelong love. You know, it's very, very weird the way it came about because, you know, I was trained from like 7, 8 years old by my semi-pro golfing uncle for golf. So I spent lots and lots of years on driver's ranges, par three courses, golf courses with the old Scottish greens, and later years championship courses. So, I mean, I was being trained for golf. My father was training me for baseball. I was a shortstop in baseball. He started me at a young age. He was always hitting balls to me and teaching me technique and things like that. And then, of course, you know, with me being raised up in the black community, of course, there was Sunday in the park playing sandlot football, which I played, and b-ball. So I've done all that. But all of a sudden, one day, my stepsister came home, and this was like when I was around 14. And she said, "Hey, we need to go out to the park. I want to show you something that they taught us in PE class today." And I was like, "Well, what was that?" And she said, "It's called paddle tennis." And I don't know how she had gotten those paddles out of school, but she got them out on her own with some tennis balls, and we went out there. Now, she was supposed to have been showing me how to play paddle tennis and started beating my butt like there was no tomorrow. That's when it first started hitting me. And then I was like, wow, I saw this thing on TV and I like it. And I started reading books on it and things like that. And that's how I got started. And it's been a love ever since. I went all the way through golf and I continued with golf and my other activities. And of course, academics, because I'm high on academics. But, I got all the way to high school, and I actually lettered in golf my junior year on the golf team, my junior year in high school. And I quit golf after that year and moved to the tennis team and lettered my senior year in tennis.
Oh, my gosh. My gosh. Well, before I forget, I want to make sure that our callers know what number to call. And for those of you that have a question for Morris King Jr., the number is 866-472-5788. That's 866-472-5788. Well, back to you, Morris. Now, you have had then a long interest not only in sports and academics, but it sounds like that you've just really got just really hooked on tennis at around the age of 14.
Yeah, I did. And I always tease my players, I said, you know, you and I have the same coach. They went, "What? What do you mean?" I said, "We have the same coach." And that's why they're thinking about it and went, "You taught yourself? But you don't have any unorthodox, weird-looking anything." I went, "No, I don't." You know, it was a hard, longer way to learn, but I did it and got it done. And the reason I had to do it like that is because at the time I came along in tennis was at the country clubs only. And uh-huh. The country clubs were all segregated, uh-huh. And therefore I couldn't get into the country clubs to take lessons. My father would have paid for it. My father was one of the first black business owners in Florida, so it wouldn't have been a problem getting him to pay for it. But couldn't get in there. So
now that's very interesting, Morris, because now you were raised in then what would be called the Deep South,
yeah,
and with. And talent and interest in a subject, but it was not possible for you to get lessons.
Right. So, you know, I just went and got every book that I could get, and I kept looking at any tennis matches on TV. You know, I got to see Rod Laver-Nose, Newcomb, Kenny Rosewall, I think, was one of my favorites at the time. So then as I was looking at the illustrations in the books and reading how they said to do things and how they said to grip the racket and how the stroking technique, the footwork and all that, then I would so engulf myself with what I was learning technically to the point that I would look at TV and I would compare the image that I had in my mind as to whether or not they were doing it exactly like it was written in the book. And then I had to go out and try to practice. Now, practicing was practicing by myself because I had nobody else I could go and hit with and stuff like that. I had to go a substantial way to find a hitting wall just to hit against a wall just to try to work on these things. So this was a very, very long, hard road to learn how to play tennis, but that bug hit me or something hit me, and I was just driven. And didn't know I'd end up where I am now. Had no plans for it. It was just driven to want to play this sport called tennis.
Well, that's just remarkable. Do you by any chance remember your first tennis match with someone or someone from another culture other than African American?
No, I don't.
Well, that's quite all right. That's quite all right, because you have had a lot of tennis under your belt, Morris, over the years.
And I'm old, you know, so that's a long time ago. So, hey. I actually don't remember, because it would have been before even playing for the high school team, and you don't know who those guys are. You just know you're playing another school, another team, and those were mostly white schools. Now, there were, like, two black schools we played, but they were mostly white schools that we were playing. So I couldn't begin. Oh, I tell you what, the first match was my stepsister who beat the crap out of me with a little paddle ball.
Is that right? Well, I tell you, these are great memories, and really it speaks to your, you know, dedication at an early age to sports. And, you know, from the way you described it and the way that you grew up, it was really within a community as well that, although more than likely segregated at that time, it was a community, a strong community. Is that true?
Kind of. Black folks weren't exposed to tennis back then, you know. So, but it's a thing wherein if you were doing something positive, folks backed you, you know. They kind of rooted you on, which might be a little different today in some areas, but, you know, we stood together because this is, you know, coming through the civil rights movement and all that kind of stuff. Black folks were solidly together more so then. We had a common cause all the time, consistently. But they supported me, although they may not have played tennis. Now, don't get me wrong. Family members were irate when I jumped from the golf team to the tennis team my senior year. I mean, there was some eyes rolling, some snarling and everything else, and growling, because they want to know, how in the world do you spend all these years training for golf? You have some of the best clubs and everything. You have the Julius Burrow signature Wilson line and all this stuff, all these years, all this money, all this. And you're going to go to the tennis team.
Well, I guess that would be a surprise. Definitely be a surprise.
Yeah, that was a surprise. They were quite upset about that thing, because they just knew that I was supposed to be the predecessor to Tiger Woods. You know, I was supposed to have already been out there paving the way, I guess. Lee Elder knows why out there at the time, but, you know, I don't know. Like I said, all of a sudden, one day I was turned off. I felt that golf was too much more like a game than a sport, and tennis had all the running and sweating and everything that's associated with sports.
Well, you know, Morris, I think this gives us a very good idea about you, the person, and the circumstances of which you grew up in the world of a community in Florida, the Deep South, and also the talent that you have in other areas of sports as well. We want to get to, though, how you transitioned into the world of coaching. And to do that, we will be back in just a minute.
Okay.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses, while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show. Our guest today is Morris King Jr., and the topic is World-Class Tennis, a Black Coach's Point of View. And before we went to break, Morris was kind enough to share with us a little bit about his background and how he grew into loving tennis. And you know, you may know already that he's not only a world-class professional tennis coach, but he's also a former advisory coach of Venus and Serena Williams through their father, Richard Williams. And early in their pro career. And you can read up about him on our website. Go to our website and it will point you to how to get more information and contact even Morris King Jr. Well, Morris, can you give us an idea about what your move was into the world of world-class coaching? And you might have a statement about that.
The thing that I have is I keep going back to the statement. I did an interview on blacktennispros.com back in 2008. And I asked her, I said, you know, I asked her to let me make a statement to start off this entire interview because I just feel that this basically sums up what a black coach, whether world-class or otherwise, has to deal with. And I'm actually reading from the actual interview on, and it's still up on blacktennispros.com. This was on part one. It was a three-parter. And it says, quote, white players hire white coaches. Hispanic players hire Hispanic coaches. Japanese players hire Japanese coaches. Chinese players hire Chinese coaches. But black players hire white coaches, except where the coach is the parent, of course. And that's how I opened that interview up, and I blew Sheila Johnson out of there because she was like, whoa, I didn't expect that. Well, but that's the reality. And that's the reality I still have to face as a coach because in getting hired, see, I have to be hired. You know, it's not like if I were a player. If I were a player, as long as I can sign up and go out there and play and win, they can't stop me. You know, I can go and play and produce, and that's all it takes. When you are a coach, you have to be hired. And if you're dealing with folks who are racially sociopathic, as I like to call them, I don't like to really say racist, but racially sociopathic, and they have all these stereotypes and hang-ups as to why they won't hire you, then the only source I have left are my own people once they start being introduced to sport and playing it more. Well, my own people don't want anything to do with blackness either.
Is that right? Is that, you know, is that across the board, or you think in some instances, or is just 100%?
Mostly across the board. Now, there have been some exceptions, of course. I mean, if you look at Zane Zina, and I think Lori McNeil came out of her park situation in Houston, and they had a black coach out there that they really stuck with. But those are really the exception. Those are the exception. Because, I mean, even look at Venus and Serena, who everybody rah-rah-rah, sis, boom, bow. I shook up everybody on that Black Tennis Pros interview when I revealed the truth about that situation. They don't have blacks, Venus or Serena, whether it's in tennis or outside of tennis in their private businesses. Their father hired blacks. Their father hired across the board in actuality. He would hire anybody he thought to get the job done. So that means that if you were black and he thought that you can get the job done, you're getting an opportunity. Well, it doesn't work like the otherwise. So Venus and Serena are just as guilty. If anybody's seen their reality shows that they put on TV or anywhere like that, when those cameras go into their businesses behind the scenes, you're not seeing anybody black in there.
Well, you know, that's quite a statement, you know, because Venus and Serena, of course, aren't here to either defend that one way or the other. So I really don't want to concentrate on maybe what they in particular do or don't do, because I don't know. You know, I don't know why
The only thing I say is what my grandmother used to always tell us. My grandmother used to always say, listen, don't say anything. Just open your eyes and open your ears. Just observe. That's all you need to do. It doesn't take any denunciations or anything else. But that's the world that I have to deal with as a professional coach, because then I can't make money. I can't feed, house, and clothe myself and my family, because this stuff is very, very detrimental, these practices. And I don't have anybody that I could even fall back on. And you got to understand, see, that impacts me a great deal more so, because I'm a child of the 60s. I went to jail in the 60s, protest marching, and I was only 12 years old because they took us to the juvenile shelter, so that there would be opportunities for us, so that there could be a Venus and Serena, a Sloan Stephens, or anybody else. And I also did it so that I could get opportunity. Well, I'm not getting it, and I'm being shunned by everyone.
Well, you know, that's something, because you're on our show. I'm not shunning you.
No, you're not shunning me, that's why I open up things. Oh, thank you so much, because I just don't get this. This is just so great. That's why I said that. I was like, I hope I'm not overplaying it. I said, but I just want you to know how appreciative I am, because I just don't get it.
Well, you know, in the heart of racism and racial healing, it's important that our listening audience knows really the internal feelings about people as well, such as yourself. And so there may be a number that may not particularly appreciate or like the way you're describing your reality, but it is your reality. So let's just say for the moment that, you know, that is your story. And others may have some questions about that. They can call in if they would want, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I can tell you, Morris, that based on your bio and that, you have been in some pretty world-class arenas here. What is it that you like about coaching the most? How about we can work this in with, we had a caller, Aziz from Kansas City, Missouri. And he wanted to know, one of his questions, he's an ardent listener of ours, he wanted to know, are you coaching to play, or are you coaching people to win?
Am I coaching people
to play, to learn how to play or to win?
Okay, coaching people to learn how to play is when I first started tennis, when I first started coaching, because as a teaching pro, you're teaching people from the ground up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm one of the coaches who has taught kids and everybody else from the ground up, and then make them a real player, where they can either be a recreational player or they can decide to go out and start playing the USGA Junior Circuit. So that's teaching to play at a lower level. When you get up where I am, now it's a circuit coach, where you're coaching either world-class juniors or pros. There's no more learning how to play. Everybody knows how to play. It is about getting the W now. So it depends upon where you are. If I had a tennis camp like I used to, an academy, a school, anything like that, where I have entry-level people, then, of course, it's for them to just learn how to play the game first, because they haven't made a decision as to what direction they want to go into with the sport. It's an individual kind of decision. Some people just want to learn for fun because they love the sport. Some people are driven to compete. That means that these are not concerned with just learning the game. They want to get those W's. You know, W meaning win.
Right.
So it depends upon the individual of these. I coach it all. I mean, I have coached all. Now my focus is also on the W's because I'm a world-class coach, and it's about winning championships and tournaments and getting endorsement deals and bigger piece of the monetary pie and that kind of thing. So you don't have a choice. It's not you, in this world of high-level competitive tennis, there's no just doing it for the fun of and the thrill of just playing. No, mm-hmm, no. Mm-hmm. That's down at the recreational level or at the entry level when they're first learning how to play.
Well, now you've brought in another notion here that I'm not quite sure that I understand, and that has to do with being a circuit coach. Can you tell us, what is a circuit coach? What does that mean?
Okay, circuit coaches, when you look at TV and you see a tennis match, mm-hmm, and you see they'll show a scene of the coaches sitting in what is termed a coaching box in the stand. Those are circuit coaches. They travel the circuit with a player. They're not back at home at a tennis facility or a tennis club, a country club, or an academy, just feeding balls all day long to teach people how to play tennis. They're out traveling 24/7. Every week, they're at a tournament. They leave one tournament, and depending upon when their players are defeated or they win, and their flight reservations to the next tournament, they leave one tournament and they fly immediately to the next tournament, and that's how they live. You just fly and play the circuit.
Well, that's quite a deal. So that is also a part of being a world class tennis coach, is being on the coaching circuit or a circuit coach.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
that's.
Don't get me wrong. You don't have to if you want to. You can be once you. You know, coach world class players, and you become a world class coach. I mean, you can always go back and sit at some camp if you want to, or some academy or school, and just teach. Some do. Some get burned out from all the travels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it depends on the individual. But I am a circuit coach. I prefer to sign a contract with either a world class junior who's playing the ITF, the International Tennis Federation circuit, then traveler circuit, or with a pro.
Well, that's very interesting. It kind of expands the information about what a tennis coach, a world-class tennis coach, does and can do. You think of the players out there, but not necessarily the coaches traveling with them and being with them and instructing them even while they're going through their paces of winning various matches and games. Well, I have another question for you. Let's see how far we can get with this before we have to go on break, because, this has to do with the how many people of color actually come up through the ranks of tennis. So, are they pitted against one another, or are they somehow, is there a pipeline of players, young players, I guess, in the beginning, and how that piece of that works to even get to the levels to need a circuit coach or a professional world-class tennis coach. And gosh, we're out of time. We'll take our break, and we'll be right back with Morris King Jr.
News, opinion, passion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health? The financial physician, Lou Scatigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Variety Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician live every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show today. Well, you know, we're talking with Morris King Jr., who's a world-class tennis coach. And I'm delighted, Morris, that you are sharing a lot of the information about the world of world-class tennis coaching and how it works in the pipeline. Well, it looks like we do have a caller online right now, and maybe this is a good time before we cover a slightly different topic to take a call. Hi, Willie. Welcome to our show.
Well, hello, Sharon. Yes, this is Willie Robinson. I'm from Morris's hometown. I went to school with Morris.
Oh,
Willie, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I'm listening to this show, and I'm very excited about it.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Well, yes. Do you have a question or a comment, Willie?
Yes, I have a question. My question is, as influential as Venus and Serena and the Williams family is, why does Morris think that they are not supporting him or backing him like they should?
Well, Morris, thank you so much, Willie, for calling. What do you think about that, Morris, for a moment?
That's an interesting question. Let me clarify now. First of all, as I have had this discussion with a lot of people, because a lot of people want to dump on Richard Williams all the time to me, and I won't have any parts of it. Richard Williams gave me an opportunity that nobody else gave me. Now, don't get me wrong. I was already a world-class coach when he approached me because I had already coached world-ranked players, not necessarily on the higher-level pro circuit, but of my own students who would come up with juniors and everything who went on to play lower-level pros and get ATP world points. Richard Williams gave me an opportunity that nobody else gave me to be on the bigger stage than anybody else has ever given me. That's why I allow people to dunk on him about couldn't he do more for you and blah, blah, blah. He gave me a start. He doesn't have to carry my entire career. It shouldn't be like that. Once I built a reputation and I have a resume that is bigger than God, most of these other coaches who are traveling and working all the time, mm-hmm. and I'm being not given the same, how can I say, credence, credibility, as a result of my body of works and my accomplishments with players as really white coaches. Okay, so, you know, I don't want anybody to start dumping on Richard. Richard gave me a great opportunity. Now, could Venus and Serena have done something once they became of age? Yeah, I mean, they could have. But, again, I think that they think that they're playing a political game or something. Whatever their motivation is, you know, that's something you'd have to ask them. I can only tell you the fact. The fact is they don't. That I can tell you. The fact is they did not approach me. The fact is it was their father who came and got me. And he came and got me really kind of as a last resort because he too had been, and he and I had this discussion, he had been tricked by press and everything to believe that these white coaches were the greatest of greats and all that kind of stuff. So he said that that's how he got tricked in coming to Florida and coming here. And then how I got with him is he was disappointed when he first bought the girls from California. He was moving every day between the Voluntary Academy, Rick Macy, and the Goosel Bassett Academy, and he was not liking it. Well, Jim Marks, who was publisher of Florida Tennis newspaper at the time, had been talking to Richard, and Richard was threatening to take the girls back to California. So Jim Marks called me on the phone and said, would you be interested in talking to Richard Williams? Because Richard is talking about taking his daughters back to California because he doesn't like the way things are going. And I think that you ought to talk to him. Maybe you all can work something out. We can keep him in Florida. And so 2 days later, I think I gave Jim Marks the okay, give him my phone number. And 2 days later, Richard Williams called me. So I don't want people to think that he should carry my entire career. No, I don't believe in that. I think that he gave me the jump start that I have, and it's something on my resume that's bigger than other resumes are. Yeah, these guys are getting the opportunities and they're getting calls. They're even being given something called a 2-week trial. See, a lot of you don't know how the ins and outs.
What is a two-week trial?
Okay, before a player signs a contract with you, because they don't want to take the chance of locking themselves into somebody when it's not going to work out, they will call you and bring you in and have you traveling with them for 2 or 3 weeks so that you can see, and look, you're not on the contract yet, but it's a trial period to see if this thing is going to be a good marriage or just what. You know, either one could pull out. And they'll give you a trial in a heartbeat. Well, they've been given white dog catchers trials, and I can't get one even with my name being associated with two of the greatest players who going down in history is two of the greatest to ever play the game. Not to mention what I did with the little Bosnian kid, Ahmed Delic, at 14 years old. Okay,
Are we talking about part of this pipeline? Because that's part of the discussion as well, Morris. So part of the pipeline is that if a person has opportunities to basically have a 2-week trial, that brings about, that's part of the process in terms of getting on and remaining on the world stage of tennis. There's part of, sometimes what we refer to as, the institutionalization, institutions, how institutions work or don't work as it relates to this. So you can be a circuit coach. That's one area. You can be what's called or given what's called or earn what's called a 2-week trial period to see what's going to work and what's not going to work. So are there other things like that in the pipeline that would have someone who might be a person of color to become more known, or is it just not available?
No, I've tried every trick that I can think of. I'm a former politician, and I pull a political trick, anything I can to get recognized. But if you can't be recognized by mainstream tennis press, if they decide to blackball you, block you, or anything like that, or to do what Daniel Patrick Moynihan called benign neglect, if they engage in that kind of practice, you can't get your name out there, because the pro players themselves actually rely on the press to expose them to anybody who's new out there who's doing great work.
Hold on a second, because what you said, I want to make sure that I understand this. So, is this to say that part of that pipeline has to do with the public or media exposure of a coach and that media exposure?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about
absolutely.
That?
Yes, absolutely, including ESPN. Because if you can't, I don't care how good you are, if you don't get the exposure, people don't know that you exist. I've had too many people question me, even here in my hometown, Jacksonville, and they go, you actually live here? And you did this, but how come I missed all of this? I'm going, wow. I hear that so much. And I'm not talking about just from blacks. I hear it from whites all the way across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you even existed. I mean, oh, my God, I ran across your website and I didn't know. And how come we don't know about you?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had people who have sent me emails after seeing my website. How come we didn't know about you? And then I'll send them copies of the articles and all kind of stuff. But and it has to do with press. And that, a lot of the interviews I've done, I've talked about that a great deal, how the press shuns you. blackballs you. Keeps anybody from knowing that you exist. Therefore, if you don't get any advertising, there's no marketing, you're not going to get hired.
So is that to say that another part of this process, if you will, that might just not be so clear, to those of us who watch tennis and participate in it to some degree, you know, just as a weekend kind of warrior kind of thing, that if a person is a coach and they don't have a relationship, let me put it that way, with media or people in media, then their name doesn't come up at times to be considered for jobs? Is that what I'm hearing, Morris?
To an extent. I don't know if I go as far as saying have a relationship with them. If the mm-hmm. media just did its job objectively, that's all it takes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mm-hmm. take special treatment. See, they play favoritism. I mean, you know, if people talk about racism in tennis, racism is not, to me, not the biggest problem in tennis. It is favoritism overall. Now, within favoritism, that can be racism, because racism is a part of favoritism, but I got white friends who can coach their butts off, who have reputations for producing world-class players and everything, who've applied to the United States Tennis Association to become national coaches, and they can't become national coaches either because these guys in player development are too busy hiring cliques within cliques and fans and stuff like that, and which means that my white friends can't get hired, and they always tease me saying, well, you know, you're in just as bad a shape. In fact, you're in worse shape than we are because you produce world-class players like we do, but you also got that race thing that you have to confront because they can pull out the race card on you, and we just laugh it off like that. And I go, yeah, I do have that double-edged sword, though. And they go, yeah, you do. So it's favoritism, which can include race.
I see.
That's a problem.
Well, you know, in the intros to this show, I think in part of the episode description, I wrote about this genteel world of tennis. Anyone, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Does that have a large part to play? Do you think in the coaching aspects and the player aspects and the rules and unwritten rules and the encoded rules about what to do and what to say, all that kind of stuff. Is that important still?
Not in my opinion. It depends upon who you are. I always tease folks and say, you know, in tennis, they operate by country club rules. I'm always teasing them, saying that, you know, you can't speak against the membership. If they're doing good things or they happen to get a win, you can say all the positive stuff. But if that same coach or player is not doing well, you're supposed not to say things against certain people and all this kind of stuff, if it's on the negative side. So I don't know about, you know, how genteel it is. I've not received any of that gentility, okay? I mean, they have slammed me. I mean, if anybody's read the expose at protennisexpose.net, which was put on the internet back in 1999 by an investigative journalist who had two investigators working with her. And she's not black, by the way. I'm going to let you all know that. She outlined calling campaigns against me. First thing, she named names in this document because she made witnesses sign affidavits and all that kind of stuff. She revealed more than I knew was going on. I mean, I knew certain things were happening. I just didn't know I was being hit that hard and that badly. They organized calling campaigns. They were telling people, you know, more so whites, not to do business with me. They were making up all kind of fabricated lies based on stereotypes and things like that. Well, I remember one time Danielle Wiggins came in to train one day. Danielle was at the time 11 years old and was number 8 in Florida, ranked Florida in the top 10. And she said, Coach, they're talking about you real bad. And I said, talking about me real bad? She said, yeah, I was talking to my friend last night on the phone about it. And she was talking to her white friends, her little white girlfriends. And she said, I said, well, what are they saying? She said, they're spreading the word that we fight over here all the time.
Oh my gosh.
I said, what do you mean fight? You mean like fight for points? Yeah, we're going to fight for points now.
Said, well, you know, on that note, Morris, we're going to have to take our break and we'll be right back with Morris King.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen to the women's side of the fitness industry on Fitness RX Radio. If you're looking to stay healthy and look great, or are getting ready to compete athletically, this is the show for you. We'll look at competitions from the inside out, bring you fitness tips, nutrition to keep you on top of your game, and so much more. We want to hear from you, too, and we'll take your questions by phone or email. Tune in to Fitness RX Radio, airing every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Look and feel your best. Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show. We're talking with Morris King Jr., who's a world-class professional tennis coach, and the subject is World-Class Tennis, a Black Coach's Point of View. Now, we do have a caller, Bob from Detroit. Welcome to our show.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Bob.
Sharon, I wanted to make a comment to Morris on some of the things that he said about breaking into the coaching aspects of golf, and he started, with tennis, and he started off with golf, and I have a relative, I live here in Detroit, and I'm probably a little bit older than Morris, and so what I wanted to say to Morris was, when I was growing up, I had an aunt that was very big into the golf area, and that was long before Tiger came into the area. But what I wanted to say is the success breeds success. And what I wanted to ask Morris before it gets to be a racial thing, what tennis players have you coached that have become successful? And what is that on your resume that brings you forward to say that you are a successful coach? Now, I know we've had discussion about Richard Williams, but Richard took his daughters all the way up. And of course, we saw this last weekend where Serena won the French Open. Anybody that's associated with Serena right now is a success. And so my question to you is, can you give us an insight onto the African-American players that you have coached that have become successful?
Thanks for calling, Bob. Morris, what's your reaction to that question?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Those are not African American players I've coached. First of all, the timing of when Richard Williams bought the sisters to me. Like I said, it was kind of an act of desperation when Richard bought them to me, because Venus had been playing the circuit for 2 years. She had already been down to the academies and all those other places, and she was losing consistently in the first round of every pro tournament. So that when Richard came to get me, that's what he was expressing, that I've taken her to all of these brand names, and they haven't been able to get the job done. She had the contract with Reebok and the whole nine yards. So for me to get with him and to devise a plan to turn her around, which I did, because I started in May of 97. And then that August was the first time the big results of the turnaround came because she made it to the finals of the U.S. Open. So that I don't understand why would I not get credit for the turnaround from all of the guys who got hyped as being so much better than me and so much all of that. And their work was the work that she was losing using. But see, again, that's where that favoritism thing comes in. If she's doing bad, everybody has to be quiet. Now, if she was doing great, then they would have been hyping those people. The other players is, if you look at Ahmed Dele came here, and he asked me something about the other African-American players. Then those other African-American players that they came up that high. These other players that I dealt with were white, except Edmund Dramu, who was actually African. Ahmed Dele got here when he was like 13 as a Bosnian refugee fleeing the war. And he had been here, I don't know how long he had been here. He had been in Jacksonville about 6 months. And a black kid named Errol Stewart found him. You know, kids are hitting with each other in different locations and found him. And Ahmed was expressing his disdain for a lot of the coaches that, whose clinics and lessons he had taken around Jacksonville. And Errol's convinced him to come to me, long story short. Long story short is I took Ahmed, by the time he was 14, turned around his deficiencies, because Ahmed was, go to my Facebook page and look at the Ahmed Dele coaching controversy, and I think it would give you a greater detail, so I haven't spent a lot of time giving you all the details. But he was deficient. At 14, I turned the thing around, and Ahmed ended up at the Orange Bowl, not the Junior Orange Bowl. Tennis players know what the Orange Bowl is in terms of world-class juniors. You have to be invited. And he went to the Orange Bowl playing in the 16s draw when he was only 14 years old. Murat Safin, who became the great pro Murat Safin from Russia, was the number two seed in that draw. Federer is in that age group and wasn't good enough to even make the draw. The much heralded Roger Federer, who was number one in the world, and they're saying he's probably one of the greatest players to ever play the game. But he wasn't good enough to make that draw. So I'm the one that turned that around. I think I should get credit for such that kind of a turnaround. Edmund Dramu, 16 years old from Guinea, West Africa, had never ever had a coach before. It was self-taught. Came over here with Florida State Senator Dr. Arne Geraldo, and Dr. Geraldo asked me to look at Edmund. I took Edmund in about 6 months. The kid had unbelievable ability and learning potential. But anyway, long story short, Edmund Dramu ended up winning not a junior tournament, a men's open designated in Melbourne, Florida.
Well, you know, Morris, obviously you're going to have some stories. You're going to have some stories. And these are great stories. I think that it answers Bob from Detroit's question. And we only have maybe two more minutes to this show. And I'm just dying to ask this question.
Okay,
Morris, what do you think is the future of tennis, world-class tennis coaching and people of color, and in particular African-Americans in this case, in about a minute and a half? What's the future?
Well, it's an easy question. Easy. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest. I'm just being honest. I have no idea.
What do you think should happen? What's the one thing that you think should happen?
I think people ought to get the same opportunities that white coaches get. If white coaches do something that's excellent or something that's noteworthy, all of a sudden they become the next great, next best thing or the next great thing. I think that if you have afforded that to them, as soon as a black person comes along and does anything that's exceptional, then they should be afforded the same opportunity. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't all of a sudden shortchange me just because you don't like the color of my skin.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't like that I'm bald-headed.
Is that a criteria? I'm just joking. Morris. Well, you know, in just maybe a couple of minutes that we have left as well, I noticed that over the course of our time spent together that a lot of what you have to say, important things that you have to say, borders on opportunity.
Right.
Borders on opportunity for exposure, borders on opportunity to basically
right.
be heard, borders
right.
on opportunity about favoritism in
right.
A sport that historically
right.
really has been very, very much one that's has limited limited a number of players because it costs money to play tennis.
Right.
You know, it's not like basketball where you can set something up on even a street corner, if you would, or even the countryside someplace and play. You know, tennis
right.
requires money. Is there anything in particular in about 30 seconds that you can give us some insights into about that in 30 seconds, your view?
Well, you know, the money thing is a problem. You know, you're going to have to find a way to finance the deal. Black players have come to me. I've actually given them scholarships. You know, I've actually had to foot the bill for a lot of them. A lot of them weren't good enough to go pro, but I was able to get them full ride in college. And college paid for their tennis paid for the college education, and now they're out just working, people taking care of their families. USTA has money, but there are strings attached to the money that causes problems. If you have no other choice, I mean, you don't have another choice. You got to do what you got to do, you know, kind of thing. I would prefer that you got with doctors or these multimillionaire athletes, beg them, whatever you got to do to get them to finance your kid, if your kid has great potential.
Well, you know, that's quite a testament, Morris, and it's really good to know that there are people out there that we don't hear about in the news, like yourself so much, that really have some background and experiences that help us better understand the story behind the story of world-class tennis coaching. Our time is up. I wanted to thank you so much for being on our show, Morris King,
Jr. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.